New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
And welcome. I'm Emmy Vadnais, co-host with Jeffrey Mishlove. Our topic today is Awakening Young Minds to Psychic Abilities. My guest is Elizabeth Tontlian-Lord, who is a board member of the Ryan Research Center and a clinical laboratory technician. She is also a volunteer with New Thinking Aloud and a copy editor for the Journal of Parapsychology. She is writing a fictional series about a telepathic teen for young adults. Today, we'll be discussing her first book, Calliope O'Callaghan and the Psi Syndicate. Elizabeth is located in Durham, North Carolina. Now, I'll switch over to the internet video. Welcome, Elizabeth. It's a joy to have you with me on New Thinking Aloud today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you today as well.
Today is a little bit of an unusual interview because typically on New Thinking Aloud, we have guests where we explore nonfiction and we explore topics related to consciousness, parapsychology, the paranormal, spirituality. And today we're going to be discussing your book that is a fictional book, but is really based on these phenomena.
That's true. I tried to place in what we would call an allegory or fictional storyline a lot of what I've learned about parapsychology, including some of the stories and some of the people who I interviewed and where I've read, especially the stories that Louisa Ryan had put in her books back in the 60s. People wrote to her a lot of letters saying about these interesting things that happened to them. And they just wanted somebody to give them some acknowledgement of what happened in their lives.
In fact, Sally Rhinefeather asked you to write this book.
That's true. The story is I was basically interested in writing a thriller originally about a psychometrist who held on to a woman's bracelet and got an impression of her last few minutes of life. And I wanted to learn more about psychometry, so I went into the Ryan Center during their Wednesday afternoon science meeting. These people are incredibly kind to take somebody right off the street whom they don't know, saying, yeah, I want to be an author and write a story about psychometry. And they opened my mind to a whole lot more about psychic ability. And Sally Rhinefeather said after one of our meetings, she said, Elizabeth, when you're done writing this thriller that you're going to do, I'm sure a whole lot of young people would benefit from a story about their issues, if you will, the things that they're going through as psychic children. And I said, well, I think I'd rather write that, you know, anyway. Thank you. The book about the thriller was a little dark, a little hard to write. But this is more uplifting. This has got a purpose. So I decided to do that instead. The other book I hope will be written sometime in the future, but I really want to focus on young people, especially in their issues involving psychic ability.
Sally Rhinefeather is the daughter of J.B. Rhine and Louisa Rhine.
That's correct. So the history beyond that is these two botanists went to Chicago. And they listened to the author of Sherlock Holmes speak about spirituality. He really got involved with it later in his life. And when they listened to him speak and how passionate he was, they decided to change their entire career path. They came to Durham, North Carolina, went to the Duke Psychology Department and started working there on parapsychology. And J.B. Rhine is the first person to bring psychic ability into a laboratory setting. He wrote the first book about it, as far as I'm aware, about laboratory work called Extrasensory Perception.
How have your experiences being involved with the Rhine Research Center assisted you with writing this book?
When you're an author, especially of fiction, life is going around you. You accept all this information in from life and you put it to the page. So anybody that you know, you say, I really like that character. I'm going to put that person to the page. I like that name. I'm going to borrow that name. We're little scavengers. So when I went in there, and I have to tell you, I spent a good 4 or 5 years first really absorbing, going through the Alex Tanis library, similar to what I have behind me here, just looking at all the books I could find. And then I found out, oh, wow, there's more. So I just kept digging in further and further. I said, oh, wow, there's more. And you can get into analysis paralysis, which is something a lot of authors talk about, especially nonfiction authors. How much more can I put in this book? I'm only allowed about 300 pages. So you have to stop yourself eventually and say, okay, let's actually put together a cohesive storyline, make it interesting to young people, and give it some speed, some interest, and whatnot, but also include all the information about psychic ability that people might be interested in, may have had themselves. Maybe they're experiencing these psychic events and people are judging them a little harshly. So there's always that story in there, a little bit here, a little bit there. So yeah, it was great fun. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. And all these people were just constantly helping me with it. I can't express my gratitude enough for all of their open-armed enjoyment of it.
Several of the characters are based on real people who have been involved with the Rhine. Some of them, I think, maybe even have been guests on New Thinking Aloud. How did you incorporate some of these characteristics into your characters?
I wanted some authenticity along with some fictional aspects. So there are some characters involved in this. Some people might see, might recognize if they have studied anybody who is anybody in the psychic world. We have Joe McMonagle. He was involved in the SRI project in the 1960s, well, actually a little later, 1970s through 1990s. They were learning how to do clairvoyance through a process. And the process they developed is called remote viewing. And he was one of the people that they got involved with this process. And he has a couple of books out. They've got a movie called Third Eye Spies out, if you really want to learn more about that particular program. The other one is Ed Edwards. He is one of the most amazing psychokinetics. Psychokinesis is being able to move things without touching them with your hands, your feet, no part of your body. You use basically some sort of energy transference. He's amazing. If you ever get to see his stuff, he's in the book. Laura Lynn Jackson is a very lovely and talented spiritual medium. She speaks about spiritual mediumship and telepathy. She used to be a teacher of young people, so she's my inspiration for reaching young people, as well as Sally Ryan Feather. But these people all come together in this organization called the Psi Syndicate. And basically the idea behind Psi Syndicate is to both teach and study psychics. And, you know, it's not a lot of money out there for parapsychology. I'm sure Jeffrey has mentioned this many times. So they have to earn a little bit of money doing this. And they get all these psychics together and they find missing people and missing things, or maybe work with law enforcement now and again. But all their talents put together give the story of what might have happened to this missing person.
So that's essentially the plot of the book, is that there is Callie, you call her a Calliope, but Callie is how you refer to her in the book, who is this young woman, a teenager, and she has grown up with her mother, who would perform psychic readings and the like. And her daughter learned how to do that. However, her abilities when she was younger was more from the trying to create atmosphere and wasn't very authentic. However, a twist seemed to happen in the story when she was pressed and somebody thought she was a scam artist, which she sort of had been up to that point. Right. And she actually discovered that she could start receiving information about this person's life.
That's correct. Callie, that I call her, short for Calliope, as you said, she and her mother were basically the only people they had. There is another person named Peggy that is very integral to the story as well, but basically Claire's sister, not really, but they basically are. What happens often is that people will go to a psychic, go to a medium, or somebody who claims to be psychic, and they really aren't. They're using something. I'm trying to remember the name of the show. It was a magician. He would use tells or what people said. He was very observant, and he would be able to glean information through questions, you know, just broad questions getting to more narrow questions. And people thought, oh my gosh, you're psychic. So that's basically what it is. And when you go to a psychic, it's one of these carnivals or what I call Ren fairs, which is a Renaissance fair or a state fair. You might be getting somebody who's just particularly good at asking the broad questions and bringing them more and more narrow. And you think, oh my goodness, they're psychic. How could they possibly know this? It's human nature stuff. So as far as Callie knew, that's basically what her mom was doing. Callie grew up with her mother, who is a carnival medium, basically somebody who traveled around with state fairs or Renaissance fairs or carnivals. She would use a form of mentalism, which is basically using observation to see how people react to a question. And if she got a positive reaction, she would continue to ask certain questions that would limit it down to something more specific. And people would assume she's psychic because of that. And Callie learned this mentalism and used it a little bit herself as she got clients of her own. But she worked with other people in the Renaissance fairs or carnivals, one of whom was a magician. So she learned all of the tricks of the trade to try and fool people with things. Well, she got a job working with a woman who was about to get married, and her friends, who were bridesmaids, they went out on a trip, and she was to earn a little bit of money doing this. One of these women cottoned on to her being a mentalist, potentially, and cornered her in a room and said, I'm going to rat you out to my friend if you don't stop trying to take money from her. And Callie, being stuck in a corner like that all of a sudden, had this vision. And she said it seemed like a film was going across her face, like right in front of her eyes. And as the woman was sitting there, she told her her most intimate, most frightening moment. And when she was done, the woman was crying. So Callie just started to learn that maybe she was psychic after all.
Right. So this woman was pressing her and saying, if you don't give me a reading right now, I'm going to rat you out to all of my friends. And so that's when Callie started recognizing that there are some of these abilities that were within her. And the main reason you wanted to write this book is to help other teenagers and young adults to recognize that this is an ability that we all have and that it can be developed.
That's correct. One of the common ways that psychic ability seems to come through is through some sort of trauma. It can be childhood trauma, something that might have been acute, like a car accident, they had a brain injury, or perhaps a near-death experience, or it could be long-term trauma where they're being abused or they're being neglected or something like that. It seems to be a common denominator. And if you think about it, it's kind of logical. because if you're in a crisis situation, you want to be able to get as much information as possible to survive that crisis situation. So a lot of these kids in these circumstances will use hyper vigilance to try and get through a trauma if it's a family-oriented abuse. So when you're in that state, you're more likely to have an immediate psychic experience. And then you might develop it further if you have a natural ability. I like to say psychic ability is an awful lot like baseball. You can get up to bat, and every time you get up to bat, you won't hit that ball. And every time you hit that ball, you won't get a home run. Psychic ability is a lot like that. It's maybe batting 300 out of 1,000 hits, which is how they score it. And it's frustrating for scientists because it's elusive like that. And psychic ability is frequently going to pop up into your life and then pop back out of it. It's very common like that. There are some people for whom it's a natural ability. They have it all the time and they are rare. So I just wanted to let everybody know that I think, and a lot of other parapsychologists think, everybody has some level of psychic ability. It pops into their world when they need it. It pops back out of their world and they go about their lives. So that's basically what's happening to Callie at the beginning of her psychic journey.
One of the funnest parts in the book was when you created a scene called the psych aid or a psychic arcade where Callie and her friends go, and they have many of these psychic games where people can play to see how well they can do at them.
I created this place called the Psychade and the Bent Spoon Cafe. Both of those are fictional. They don't exist anywhere, but I would love for them to. They just seem like a lot of fun when I imagine them. The Psychade and the Bent Spoon are together in a location off campus. And the Bent Spoon is based on Uri Geller, who is an Israeli psychic who came on the Johnny Carson show back in the day. And he was able to bend spoon and cutlery and do some amazing things. So it's kind of an homage to him as one of the more famous of the psychics. The Psychade is a bunch of different games that are played a little differently than you would think. There's pinball games, but you don't have the buttons. You have to try and use your mind to keep the ball going. We've got a game that's very similar to what psychologists use. You try and figure out what the picture is going to be, and then you determine that, and then it shows you the results, and it gives you a score. So the way they do it is you get a certain number of points and you play with those points. And if you run out of those points, you have to pay for more points. But if you do well, then you get more points and you just keep playing. So eventually there is a New Year's Eve. They have an event where they compete to see who's the more psychic. So it's kind of fun to imagine that particular place.
Right. So the Bent Spoon Cafe doesn't exist in reality. However, you hope that it does someday.
I would hope. I think it would be fun to create arcades where people use their innate psychic ability to play games. And then they go down and have a little tea or coffee or hot cocoa and talk about it.
Taking us a little further into your story, and of course, we don't want to give too much of it away and have spoilers. The other piece that I really enjoyed in your book was how Callie was invited to participate in the Psi Syndicate. So could you explain what it is and what happened there for her, as much as you're willing to share? Because it really reminded me of a bit like Harry Potter and Hogwarts. However, these phenomena are really based on true and accurate experiences of people.
As Callie gets more and more psychic visions, she really wants to learn more about what those all mean, just like anybody else would. Why those people wrote into the Wise Orion back in the 60s. What's going on? Am I losing my mind? But she finds a group of people who are on the same journey. They're all of different ages. They all discuss their different backgrounds, everything that's happened to them. And she feels more and more comfortable and more at home. And they said, well, there are some techniques to develop this psychic ability that you seem to have. So we're going to teach you how. Meditation, concentration, intention, all of those things the parapsychologists say are important for psychic functioning. And she meets these people. She gets better at what she's doing. They invite her to work with a group of people who are trying to find missing persons or missing things. They're working basically either directly with law enforcement or maybe a private investigator. Well, the co-protagonist of this book is named Amber Biggs. She's a young girl, about 12 years old, and she was abducted right off her street. It's the worst thing a parent can imagine. So the co-protagonist, Amber, her story is interwoven with Callie's, and eventually, by the end, it will meet. But it's important for Callie to find Amber. So you see this drive because they're connected by about the last two-thirds of the book in a psychic way. Callie's starting to see her in her dreams, and Amber's starting to see Callie in her dreams. It gets a little bit interesting. Yeah,
I like how you toggled back and forth and did a really beautiful job of demonstrating how people can communicate with each other beyond what we consider space and time.
Right. And that's what's important, is people understand that this form sort of communication can happen, does happen. Sometimes it can be an acute thing where a family member is passing away and they want to visit you, but you're maybe in California and they're in New York. Well, at the end of their life, they do visit you. They just do so in an out-of-body fashion and say, hi, I just wanted to let you know I'm not going to be here anymore. Well, I love you so much. And, you know, have a good life. And then they disappear. And then that person, the live person, goes to their family, said, I had the weirdest dream. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, yeah, grandma died around 3 o'clock in the morning. Is that who you saw? Oh, my goodness. So it there's legitimate evidence. I shouldn't say evidence so much. I would say stories, experiences, where this is happening to people. They are not crazy. There is something interesting about physics that's letting this happen. I don't know what it is. I wish I did. Maybe things would be very much more interesting if we understood it better. But it is happening. And that does happen between Callie and Amber.
You weave many different abilities that people have that some people question if it's even real. Yet places like the Rhine Research Center, many of the guests we've interviewed on New Thinking Aloud, these accounts and research do show that, and rather than thinking of some of these abilities as paranormal, that in many cases they might actually in fact be normal.
That's my argument. As I said, it pops in and out of existence. It's there when we need it and then goes back subliminal. It may even happen when we're not even aware of it, as I said, subliminal. I believe a gentleman did a study about trains, specifically train wrecks, passenger train wrecks. He wanted to look at the census of people on the trains normally, and then when there was a wreck, to see if the census was normal, up or down. And consistently he found not as many people took the train the day that they had a wreck. So somehow we're getting this information. We don't know what we're feeling, but we're thinking to ourselves, maybe I shouldn't take that left turn today. Maybe I should go a different way. Maybe I should have an extra cup of coffee. 9/11 is similar to, it's a very painful time for us. But you can hear stories of people saying that they saw it ahead of time. know, some psychics that claim to have witnessed the towers falling several weeks ahead of time. And then there were people who work in the towers just decided not to go that day. So you can see evidence of psychic ability saving people's lives or trying to tell people something's about to happen and maybe you should pay attention. So that is, that's something that I want to let people know that is very, very normal. I think it's the human existence and we need to start looking into it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're encouraging people to become more aware of it.
Yeah. As you like to say, Emmy, when you discuss it, becoming more aware of yourself. A whole lot of Eastern religions say you really need to become more aware of who you are. Be willing to say who you are. You know, it's okay. There's nothing about you that's terrible. You're a human. But to also be aware of those little tiny voices and say, I want to do something today that's good. And you make that intention, you put it out there in the world, and then amazingly how the day goes by and something amazing happens. Or a synchronicity. I'm thinking that, say, for instance, my brother will call today. I just know it. Lo and behold, there's the phone call. You know, just be happy with those little synchronicities. You know, enjoy having that purpose in your life and explore yourself just as much as you explore the world around you. And that is the most important aspect of consciousness or psychic ability that I can find. It's the one that grounds us and brings us hope and joy.
Yeah. Seems to demonstrate how we are all interconnected.
Exactly. Exactly.
I also think that the more that we can trust these parts of ourselves, the more that we can allow these experiences to happen and be in the flow with them and then kind of play with them. And then over time, in hindsight, you can become more aware of when did that occur? What senses were more alive or awakened in me in that moment so that you can, in the moment and in the future, pay more attention to them so they can better serve you in your life and the lives of others.
I agree completely. That is one thing I can say about studying parapsychology that's benefited me. You know, a lot of anxiety, a lot of self-doubt. I would always look back at my day and say, I don't know if I really like how that happened. I don't like myself very much for having done that. Well, I studied this and learn more and more about it, recognizing we're all human, we're all connected, we're all loved. I don't know by what, by whom, maybe just each other, maybe that's enough. But I have a purpose, you know. Synchronicities prove this to me. I have great joy because I'm connected to this earth. I'm connected to all of you. And you are connected to me. And it's overwhelming the kind of joy you get when you have that epiphany or what they call enlightenment in the Eastern philosophies. And you just go about your day. You're still human. You're still falling on your face sometimes, but you get yourself up and say, oh, well, that happened. I guess I'll try not to let it happen again. And I'll, you know, do so in love and embrace that failure or that mistake and as a learning experience. So it does change you when you study this stuff.
Your main character, Callie, demonstrates really strong psychic abilities. And some people will have that gift and maybe embark on a profession using it. However, in your book, I think you also show how people can use it, like you were just saying, for your own everyday life. And that it isn't that sometimes people think they have to go become a football star or a basketball star or, you know, really be a rock star in order to really demonstrate that they've done well at a particular skill or talent. But these phenomena can really help each person in all aspects of their lives.
That's true. I had an experience during something called Psy Games. It's something we have at the Rhine on Friday, probably once every quarter or so. We get together and we play these games, clairvoyance, precognition, psychokinesis, stuff like that. These are the different aspects of what they study. I sat down and filled out a form as they read these Zener cards. These Zener cards have the different shapes on them. And I got an incredibly high number for the precognition aspect of it. That's heady stuff, especially when you don't think of yourself as particularly psychic. And I thought to myself, what does this mean? I'm precognitive. And then you stop and you say to yourself, you're the same person you were yesterday. You know, there's no difference. It's interesting and you can play with it. You say, well, if I have this lean towards precognition, let's play with it a little bit and see if I can figure out if there's going to be a particular kind of baseball play. Because I love to watch the Durham Bulls. That's my team. They're just down the street from me. And I sat there and I had this feeling, okay, this guy is going to hit a home run and it's going to be a triple play. And lo and behold, there it was. Does that happen every time? Well, if you force it, not so much. If it comes to you and it feels differently, then you can say, oh, interesting. But it's fun. It isn't about changing the world. It's about exploring yourself. And I can imagine if I'm watching a television show while folding laundry or doing something of that nature, I'll hear a line of dialogue and I say, I bet the next line of dialogue is blah. And I'll be right. And it's just fun. There are people that lose their minds and say, oh, wow, I'm actually psychic. I'm going to hang out my shingle and earn some money at this. When you realize that, oh, wow, this is in my life. It always has been. Now I'm aware that it's there. I can play with it. I can utilize it for my own benefit for learning who I am and what I can do, but not in and of itself. So I think there's a saying, before enlightenment, cut wood, carry water. I think it's a Taoist term. After enlightenment, cut wood, carry water. And it matters. You got to just say, oh, I'm aware of something now, move on.
Right. And those can be traps in the process of this, is getting caught up in the experiences versus taking them for what they are.
And that's true. I think that Callie gets caught up in it too, a little bit too much, because she's getting, it's just a matter of months that all of this is happening. It's not over a slow period of time. And when epiphanies hit you, they can rock you, especially when you're a teenager and you're already going through so much. So I think she makes a series of decisions that maybe in another time she would have handled differently. But because she's going through this change of perspective, I should say, she's making bad decisions. So in the end, hopefully everything works out, but it might have worked differently had she not really just jumped in with both feet, I think.
To be fair, there are many people who have been helped by psychics and mediums and other people of this ilk with their grief, with their loss, with locating missing people and so forth.
I agree with you. I'm sure everybody knows about the Forever Family Foundation if they've listened to NTA at all. That's a very important organization working with tested mediums, and they try to bring some closure for grieving families that their loved one is not gone. They've just metamorphosed, basically. They've left this corporeal form and they've become something else that we don't really understand or can explain. So those people are helping so much, those that are in pain. And teaching them how they can communicate with their loved one on their own. They don't need an intercessor. You can communicate with your loved one, what we call a discarnate, all by yourself. And it brings a joy to you. You're not alone. You're not without them. They're there. And of course, this group, the Alpha group that Callie works with at the Psi Syndicate, they each have their own abilities within the psychic arena. And they, I feel, use it to triangulate, because not information isn't reliable all the time. Time doesn't flow the same way. You can misinterpret something. So they all get together as a group and they make notes on what they learned psychically about a client. And then they give that information to the investigator, and they then utilize it in a normal investigation. So it's what tools are in the toolbox that you need to solve your problem. That's basically how the Psi Syndicate group works.
And by having more than one person work on the same case as in your book, they're able to verify each other, and that builds stronger evidence that then shows that that is accurate information.
Right. What remote viewers would call feedback. So when they remote viewers worked, somebody would go to a location. The remote viewer in a separate room in another building, unaware of where that person went, would describe a location or a structure, something of that nature. The person who went away would come back and discuss it with the remote viewer, and they would get the feedback. That feedback then gave them confidence, because it is a very, very subtle thing getting that information. Very hard not to overthink it, what they call overlay. And so when you get that feedback, that constant, yeah, you got that right, you got that right, and then you get your confidence in, and then that quiet voice is a little stronger, or you trust it a little bit better, and then you can move on to your next thing and try it. So a lot of people try remote viewing because it's a good process, or dowsing, and they get immediate feedback from it. And that's where their confidence increases and they can play with that a little bit more. But once again, it needs to be fun. It needs to be relaxed. It can't be goal oriented. It doesn't work too well that way.
I like how in your book you have the dowsers working with a map for a specific location.
I actually took several courses at the Rhine, one of which was taught by Paul Smith, who worked with the government remote viewers at the later part of the 90s. And he teaches us how to douse with a pendulum. There are several different types of dousing. One of them is with the rods. You've probably seen people walking around with rods in their hands and they cross out in front of them, or a split stick and it drops to the ground. So they know there's water there. That's the usual way they use it. Pendulum dowsing, you need a representation like a map or a Ouija type board, something like that. And you swing the pendulum back and forth. It kind of guides you along a path, or gives you a word or a yes or a no or a number or something along those lines. Some people will douse for the lottery numbers, for instance. But you use the representation, and these dowsers use the map to try and figure out where a missing person might have gone. Maybe their body is there, or maybe they are there alive, but they use that representation to find things.
You yourself have been a research subject at the Rhine Research Center.
Yes.
Can you describe a little bit about those experiences and how that informed you for your book?
Since part of the Psi Syndicate's purview is to research psychics, a lot of people from the local universities would come there and work with these people in a way that J.B. Rhine had back in the day, but also using more updated versions of testing, one of which is called the Ganzfeld Room, which is basically a place where you have no sounds bothering you. The light is red. So you go into an alpha state in your brain waves where you're not getting all that input affecting the psychic input. And then you might be able to pick something up and just talk about it. So I worked with John Kruth. He had an experiment. He was running a movie on a laptop, about, I would say, 10 minutes of it in another room. I'm sitting in the Ganzfeld room. I have earphones on, the red lights there. I'm in a comfy chair, and I just free associate. It's very relaxing and fun. And then later on, take that recording and say, well, here are some aspects of that video you got right. So I get the feedback. But that's one of the more current methods of testing psychic ability. And they use the Ganzfeld in different ways. Another one is to see if you have what's called micro PK. You affect the computer through frustration. And so I had performed that experiment. The computer was meant to frustrate me. It was on purpose. And John wanted to see if I would start glitching the system. So that was another experiment. And I felt it was necessary because I wanted to have that experience as a research subject, since Callie was going to be a research subject. And she was going to be working with a parapsychologist at the Psi Syndicate.
The Psi Syndicate is a place in your book where people can go to develop their psychic, spiritual, intuitive gifts.
That's correct.
Yeah. And John Kruth is the director of the Rhine Research Center?
Yes, he is. Has been for approximately 9 years now.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed your book, Elizabeth. It was fun for me to be taken on an adventure with psychic phenomena, especially a fictional account, because I'm frequently reading nonfiction on these topics. So it was fun to read that. But at the same time, it's really a reflection of what is accurate and possible with these experiences for people.
That was my goal. And I think it's easier for people to read fiction. It's not so difficult to imagine a story. But if you were to try and read accurate information about parapsychology, it can seem unreal. And you can say, nah, that can't possibly happen. That didn't happen. I don't agree with it. I think it makes it more palatable to be in a story.
Mm-hmm. Many people, of course, love Harry Potter, but unlike Hogwarts, your Psi Syndicate is actually based on real experiences that real people have had.
Right. So I would not put this story in what you would call a paranormal genre, simply because it is science. It is science fiction. It's real people's accounts. Real people have done a lot of the things that I said have happened in this book. So I would say it's more science fiction or urban science fiction than paranormal.
It is what Dean Radin calls real magic.
Yes, definitely.
Elizabeth, is there anything else you want to share today about your wonderful book or anything you want to share about awakening young minds to psychic abilities?
Well, I just want young people, you're going through enough already. You know, growing is not easy, and it's new to everyone who goes through it. To be psychic on top of that, when people don't understand it, it can be overwhelming. You can feel like there's something terribly wrong with you. You want to sublimate that aspect of yourself. I want to give you permission to say it's okay, that this is who I am. This is just another skill, as if I was good at playing basketball, as if I was good at playing violin, or if I was winning the spelling bee. It's no different. It's a part of who you are. And there are people who can help you identify it and work with it and integrate it into your lives so that you aren't overwhelmed by it and you don't have to put it aside. You can develop it in a way that helps you or others if you want.
Great advice. For those who want to explore these parts of themselves further, what would you recommend?
There are many, many books out there that guide people through this. There's people who are already psychic, had these experiences, wrote it down. Read those books. Laura Lynn Jackson has a couple of them. She was psychic at the beginning of her life and has been in her entire life. That's not common, and she's very strong with it. There are other psychics that could be recommended to you, not the ones that are mentalists trying to make money off of it, but real folks. And I would recommend you find the ones that are tested. And the Ryan Research Center, NTA, New Thinking Aloud, these two organizations have been integral to me in my journey of learning about it. The Ryan offers a program called PEG, which is a paranormal experiencers group, one Tuesday a month. It's available to people who are having these experiences. I've sat in on those experiences, and they're eager. They just want to know they're okay. These people just want to know they're okay. So if you are overwhelmed with it, you don't know who to go to, nobody is listening to who, to what you're going through, I should say, that's one place you can check in on. You can also write to the Ryan and somebody will get back with you to talk with you about your experiences, help you identify it, guide you to literature that would help, or a psychologist if you feel like you need that kind of guidance. So there are people out there ready to help.
And there are, of course, like you said, there are many interviews with leaders in this field and people who have had what some might consider very unusual experiences that can also offer insight and hope and guidance for people. We've got many of those videos here on New Thinking Aloud as well. Elizabeth, thank you so much for all that you're doing to help bring awareness to young adults and their parents about these abilities. I know I'm an adult, but there's that inner teen still in me, and I really enjoyed reading it. Thank you so much for being with me today.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you for letting me discuss this book and how important I think it will be to young people to read it.
Yeah. And stay tuned, everybody, because this is just the first book in what you expect to be a series.
That's correct. I didn't end the book at the ending. There is some interesting information I'm sure you're aware of. And Emmy's probably waiting for the second book now that she's finished the first one to see what happens with Callie next.
Yeah, great. And for those of you listening or watching, thank you for being with us. You are the reason that we are here.
I imagine that by now, many of you already realize that, in conjunction with White Crow Books, we've just launched the new Thinking Aloud Dialogues book imprint, and our first title is, Is There Life After Death?